Hi, and welcome to Community Focus. I know, I'm not Greg or Melvin, but I'm taking one for the team. I'm Lady J, and today I have guests with me, Lisa Tyler. She is the president and CEO of the United Way of the Lakeshore. But first, before we get off into an interview, just want to sit here and say welcome, 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 and also remind everybody that tomorrow we are having the Lavert experience for all of you to enjoy. So come out and celebrate 23 years with 103.7 The Beat. Lisa, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure, I will. I'm Lisa Tyler. I am the president and CEO of United Way, as you said. And I am completing my sixth week in that position. So it's really new.
Oh, very fresh.
Replacing the retired Christine Robert, who led our fine organization for 22 years and did a great job. She is taking a deserved retirement. And I am the new CEO, but not new to United Way. This is actually my third time, as I like to say, my third and final time working there. It was my first nonprofit job. I had been a background of print media, journal, newspapers, back when there were newspapers all the time, and joined United Way the first time when it was just United Way Muskegon County from 1990 to 96, then moved to Southern California, had a couple of kids, well, got married, had a couple of kids, and moved back to the community, did some project work for them while I was raising my children, and then 2008, I went back as communications director, which is what I had done the first time, and then quickly moved into the impact work and stayed there until September of 2015, when I left to explore new opportunities and went to Senior Resources of West Michigan, which is the Area Agency on Aging, back to focusing on communications. And then I was there until June 13th on a Friday, left there, and June 16th on a Monday, started back at United Way. Well, I didn't take any time off.
Okay, you went straight into it. Nothing's wrong with that, though.
No.
So when you see United Way, what does it stand for you? Like, what are you trying to bring that maybe that you saw when you were previously there? What are the things that attracted you to United Way itself? Tell us more about that.
Sure. Well, people who I've talked to for a while, I have a really a strong connection to United Way because my dad, I grew up in Ionia, and my dad was on the United Way board there for 25 years. So I remember when I got the job, and I had been back in Ionia for a year working at the newspaper, and I decided I wanted to come back to this area. I had lived in Grand Haven for several years, and for one thing, when I talked about coming back, I said I'd go back to Grand Haven. He said, no, if you're going to United Way of Muskegon County, you live in Muskegon County. And he was exactly right. And I have called this place home since 1990, with the exception of 5 years in Southern California. And what I love is, so that was my first nonprofit experience.
Okay.
Although I had covered him, and my parents gave back tremendously in our small little town. So they never lectured us. They just talked about, they didn't talk about it. They just showed it. My dad was on the board. Just about every nonprofit that was in Ionia, he was involved in.
It's in the roots.
It really is. So I feel a real strong connection coming back. My dad was thrilled when I worked there in the 90s. Then when I went back in 2008, he was battling cancer and he died later that year, but he knew I was back. And that made him real happy as well, that I had done that. And so I know, and then my mom just died last fall. So neither of them were there to see me get to this position that had been a dream. But I know that they're doing that. So what United Way means to me is just giving to the community. I mean, it's really the name. It is bringing together people from all walks of life, whether they're giving their treasure, their time, their talent, to try to make Muskegon, Oceana, and Newaygo counties the best that they can be. And we don't do that alone. There is nothing we can do. We're a small staff. We're 14 people, four of whom are part-time. And but we work with hundreds of volunteers. And you said you were part of the process.
Yes, I will
spring.
Be there today, actually, volunteering at your parties in the parking lot.
Yes, so we have that coming in just a few hours. But it's really just about bringing people together, figuring out the many possibilities in the community. And we can't tackle all of them, but we work together and we bring people together that maybe didn't know about things. So the community investment process you went through.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't know. We all know some of the needs, but then there's a lot of great work being done in the community and people don't always know who's doing it. Mm-hmm. A lot of it goes unnoticed, unrecognized. And so we try to call attention to that. And a big thing that we do because we don't have the financial resources to throw money at everything, but a lot of what we do is convene. So it's bringing together different organizations, bringing together different volunteers, expertise to try to help as a community. We don't have to be leading everything. There's a lot of things we don't. Sometimes we're just in the back supporting in different ways, but there's just all kinds of possibilities for what we can do. And that excites me because this is my adopted hometown. I feel this is my home more than Ionia, where I grew up. And I just really love doing anything I can to help make it the best it can be.
Okay, that sounds super, super good to hear. Definitely, I feel like you're taking one for the team and trying to get down to business. So when it comes to United Way and some of the programs you offer, is there a certain demographic that you're targeting, or a certain geographic area, or is it a certain income of people who need help? Like, what kind of programs do you offer?
It's everything. So, you know, there's a lot of focus. Of course, we have staff that manages the Homeless Continuum of Care Network work. So there's a bunch of organizations together with that, but there's a homeless, HMIS stands for Homeless Management Information System, I think. So we have staff that
work on. That's nice, because I can't remember any of those.
There's a lot of acronyms, and I had a whole bunch of older adult acronyms in my mind. I have to get back to the United Way ones. But there's no real, you know, there's all kinds of people who give, who give, you know, funding to us. And that's, you know, certainly there's a lot of people who have great financial means, but honestly, there's a lot of people who maybe are closer to needing the help. And sometimes they're giving a bigger percentage of their income. I think partly because they've either needed help and received it, or they know somebody who does, or they think they could be there. So a lot of people that are donating that way. And as far as who needs help, you know, we're working with the partners who are the agencies who are providing those services. So we do a lot of focus. Our focus for the last 10 years have been on the ALIS population, which is a term a lot of people know, but some don't. Mm-hmm. And so that ALIS stance doesn't mean it's a woman. It stands for Asset Limited Income Constrained Employed. And it's something that has been around for over 10 years that has been more part of the conversation, partly because United Way has brought it into the conversation. So when they came up with that acronym, I think it was to put a face on people. And it's the population that we used to call the working poor. So it's people who aren't at poverty level. They're a little above, but they're still struggling because one unexpected incident could plunge them back into trouble. So they're working. They're dispelling the myth that, you know, people who are struggling aren't working. These are people who are working. But things like childcare that are so expensive, car issues, you know, transportation issues, housing, all of those things, they could just be one mishap away from having a, you know, getting back into poverty, because we know how expensive it is. It costs money to wear appropriate clothes. If you've got a job in a factory, you've got steel-toed boots, those are not cheap. So there's all these things that those of us privileged to have good jobs and not have issues don't necessarily think about. So the focus on ALIS for the last 10 years, especially, I think has been really helpful, that we've got more people talking about it. And so we're really doing a lot of focus on that. So we, for example, have some work around childcare, because we know that that's a big burden. When I was raising my children, I wasn't working at the time. They were in diapers and all that, but put them in childcare just for social reasons. That's expensive to get good quality childcare.
Yes.
And we know how expensive all those early, how important all those early years of life are. And so getting good quality childcare. So we've got people working around that, and they're bringing together childcare providers and trying to do professional development and best practices and trying to get them more information so they can be the best version of childcare providers out there. So that's what one thing that we've been doing about it. We certainly work in the housing. We're just trying to get, you know, we work with a lot of our employers and try to figure out ways. There was this newer Tri-Share childcare initiative that we piloted here in Muskegon through with Goodwill, where it's similar to when Access Health had that Tri-Share healthcare, where it was like the employee pays part, the employer pays some, and some comes from the state. It's a similar model for childcare. And we piloted, and then that has gone more out in the state. So there's a lot of that kind of thing that we're focusing on. But a lot of programs, as you learned from doing the community investment process, related to youth. again, because we know how important that is, that if we are helping youth and they become adults who are able to be independent and help others. We've got some programs that help older adults as well. We provide some funding for things like senior transportation program through HOL services. And there's just a variety of things in between. So there's really something for almost everybody, every kind of demographic out there.
Okay. Now you guys heard that. There was, I don't even know what she did not list. Okay.
There's some health programs too.
Oh, see, health programs. We're talking about health, youth, seniors. I mean, Alice, I mean, you have to go ahead and check them out. So coming back to Muskegon County or United Way of the Lakeshore and your other municipalities that you work with, what are you trying to bring that's new to United Way of the Lakeshore, or are you just kind of rearranging things at the moment?
That's really a great question. So, because we have a board of directors that that are my bosses, we are going to be going soon into some strategic visioning, strategic planning kind of things, because we've had that 10-year goal, which was to reduce the ALIS population by 50% in 10 years. And of course, there was a pandemic in the middle of that. So you can't predict those things. So my recommendation, and I think what we'll be doing, is looking at the next 3 to 5 years, because 10 years is a long way to plan out. So we're going to look at 3 to 5 years and try to hone in a little bit more on what we're going to focus on. Because right now, if I were to show you a list of programs that we fund, it's a very thin and wide program. There's a lot of things, as you mentioned, if you know, go on the website or, you know, look at the materials we have, there's a lot of them. But we need to look at how we can make a bigger impact. And so it might be a bigger impact in a more narrow focus. I kind of describe it as like a shotgun versus rifle versus laser. And right now we're kind of
That's interesting. You said shotgun.
I know. I don't love to do, you know, gun things, but it was used when we did this 10 years ago. And you really, you know, we're doing this really wide.
Yeah.
It's scatter.
Yeah. Shot, yeah. Really. Well, no, that's a good analogy. Shot. I get it.
I think you understand that when you do that. Exactly. So a shotgun is spray. And I've never shot a gun, so I don't really know this, but I know the theory behind it. Shotgun sprays those little pellets wide.
Yeah.
A rifle gets it more narrow. It's a bullet and you're focusing on something, you know, a target. And then you go, you know, we all know lasers because I've used them with my cats before. You know, we're really, really focused on things. So that's the process we're going to go through. I always say to people, and when I interviewed for the job, I don't know the answer. It's not what Lisa Tyler wants for an answer. It's what the community wants. So the process will involve our staff who works with it every day, our agency partners, our board, others in the community will do some listening and try to find out. That was the whole way we came to the Alice focus 10 years ago, to figure out what the next step is. At the same time, our national, which is actually an international organization, is also trying to look at the way things have done, because people have known United Way for decades. It was the, you know, we're going to do this payroll. We go into the workplace. We do the campaigns. We ask you for money. We do about a 20-minute meeting. You give through payroll deduction, and then that happens. And it was kind of this give one time for all model. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't work in 2025 and beyond.
Yeah.
My kids are 24 and 26. I always use them as an example. They grew up with United Way because of me, but they're going to get their phone out and they're going to text to give, or they're going to use a QR code, or they can go directly. When I worked here in the 90s, the internet was in its infancy, and we weren't able to just,
it was
go
still the dial up. It was like a long time before you even connected.
Exactly. It was dial up, and you know, cell phones. I had a bag phone. I moved out of state. I didn't have a cell phone. We used walkie talkies. This is to date me, but anyway, things have changed. And so United Way's maybe lagged a little bit in its changes to that. So we're always hyper local. We're part of this national and international organization, United Way Worldwide. So there's some commonalities. We use the same brand. We focus on, you know, kind of shorthand education, income, health kind of things. But we all do things differently in our own communities, because what, even in our three counties, what Muskegon wants is different than what is available or needed in Oceana, which is different than what's available and needed in Newaygo. So there's some commonalities, but we have to look at our region, our three county area, to see what that looks like going forward. So there'll be some changes, but I don't know what they are. I just know that we'll be having a lot of conversations, and I expect it'll probably be still focused on the ALIS population, but maybe just honing in a little bit more rifle to laser focus on what we're going to do. It's very different in a lot of different United ways. I was just on a call this morning with somebody. They picked in a community in South Carolina, one specific topic, and they hone everything on reducing poverty. And they have a goal of moving 15,000 families out of poverty. I don't know what their population looks like or any of that. And then some maybe have a couple of different things. I don't know what will look like exactly, but I know we're going to be having the conversations and figuring it out.
Okay. I mean, that's a great place to start, especially bringing fresh new ideas to the table, or even just having the talk about what could possibly need to change or what needs to be revamped, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. But before we get to the event, you spoke about all the collaborations that you guys do and then how you're collaborating with the other municipalities. How important is it to have that teamwork and collaboration for United Way to be successful?
It's vital. We can't do what we do without the volunteers, without the rest of the community being involved and wanting to make change. If we were in a community that's just like, no, we're good with where we are, then I guess, you know, we'd support that. But we all know that there are needs out there. And just for example, the community investment process that happens, if we were to just look at our staff that's involved in it, we'd be looking at a couple of people, but there's 80 to 100 volunteers involved in that. And you gave a lot of time in that. That was when I used to oversee that process. That was always my favorite part of what we did, was going out and visiting the programs and seeing what they did. Because, and the people that go through that process are usually the best ambassadors we have for United Way, because you've seen it firsthand. And so then you think, wow, maybe I only gave $5 a week toward that, but man, the impact is tremendous. Just if you've looked at the childhood success program, you see what can be done, because sometimes the dollars we give leverage, bring in some other dollars from a government source. Sometimes they need a match. And then that means, like for the Child Abuse Council, they've had historically programs that needs some local match. Yeah. And then, so you could give them, I don't even know what we give them right now, $10,000 that could end up being $30,000 or $40,000 because of something else that comes in. So it's, what the nice thing is that no one person necessarily can give a tremendous amount of money. But if you can give, you know, a couple dollars a week, give us $50 over a year, that multiplied with everybody else, that makes a significant difference. Because you might think, I can't give that much, what difference does it make? But it does, because it just, it works together. And the same thing with volunteer time. Yeah. You know, we have a lot of great programs. We have our own party in the park tonight, but we've been, through our volunteer center, use our Get Connected part of our website to get the volunteers for almost all the rest of the parties in the park. So we're helping all these other organizations by putting the word out about that. And, you know, we've got a day of caring that happens every year that we're working with different organizations. We've got a retired and senior volunteer program where people are going all throughout the community and giving their time. So literally we are, as my old boss used to say, dead in the water without the volunteers, without the backing of the community. Sometimes people can't afford to give money, but they can give time. And we have a lot of people who do that as well.
Yes, yes. I mean, I loved the community investment this year, learning so much. And just even because a lot of people, I think they go off into these things and think, oh, you have to have a lot of fancy things or make it look really, really good. It's, you bring yourself, you know, and what you can give, that goes a long way. It goes a very long way. And I'm glad that you guys do that and have the opportunity for organizations to be even to be able to reach out to you guys. That's a beautiful, beautiful thing. But, you know, I know we only have a couple more minutes left. So let's get off into the parties in the park, the Westside Soul Surfers and United Way of the Lakeshore. Tell us more about that.
So, well, you know, everybody, I think most people in Muskegon know Parties in the Park is, I think, 41 years old. I used to serve on that board in the 90s when I was here, when it was a little younger. So we're really excited. This is the second year in a row that we have been able to have a party in the park. So that's tonight in Hadley Park from 5 to 9. Westside Soul Surfers has been around for ages. It's got a really great horn section, some great vocals, has a tremendous following.
I heard they're like, they're really, really popular. I've heard of them all the time. And I know I've heard them, but I didn't know they were that popular. So that's really cool.
Yeah. So I'm really hoping, you know, I know when I drove in here, it's a little cloudy, but I'm actually grateful for that because it's, I know I went to a party in the park a couple years, 2 weeks ago when it was for Age Well Services and the band was Magic School Bus. And my husband and I were driving in downtown and he says, what else is going on? And there was nothing. And I think it had been a couple weeks, but Magic School Bus plays like some early 70s kind of hippie kind of music.
Yeah.
And the place was packed. Mm-hmm. I had not seen it that busy in a long time. I'm really hoping for something like that.
Yeah.
But we, again, it takes a lot of volunteers to do that. The benefit for this, for a party in the park, goes for our volunteer center, which is wonderful because it's so broad-based, that it does cost some money. The thing that people don't always remember about nonprofits is, you know, it's a lovely thing to think everybody will do this work for free, but these, you know, we're doing this work and it is a job, but we do it in a very lean manner, as do most of the nonprofits around.
Yeah.
So this helps our volunteer center, which is really wide. That doesn't just benefit United Way. It tremendously benefits the community because since we took on the volunteer center, which used to be part of former agency Volunteer Muskegon until around 2013 or 14, what we're doing helps recruit volunteers and do some training and things for them throughout the whole community. And so that's what the party in the park benefits. So that's from 5 to 9. 5 to 6 is happy hour, where you get $1 off when you buy tickets. I think it takes 5 tickets to buy a beer. It only costs you 4 tickets but they cut it off at 6 o'clock. Like, you have to be handing your ticket before 6.
Yeah.
If you're in line, it doesn't
count. It's serious. Yeah. When that time hits.
So for an hour there, but you know, it's free to get in. It's family friendly. You can't bring any outside food or drinks because that's how the organizations, the nonprofits that benefit, how they make the money. The tickets are only good for today. You can't use them for next week when it's Muskegon Community College, I think, that it benefits. But if you just, you know, you have one or two left over, just consider it a donation to United Way, because then we get all the funding for that. So it takes a lot of volunteers, and there are people there right now who are setting up for it. And then we have 2 shifts of people that come. I'm going to be roving around selling tickets early on. We need beer pourers. There's all kinds of things. We do still even need some people for second shift checking IDs, which isn't a real popular thing to do, but it's helpful because you've got security there. But in case we needed security for something else, which hopefully we never would, it just means the lines are. So even if you want to volunteer, you know, from 6:45 until 9, you're welcome to come down and put your name in, and we'll find a way to put you to work checking IDs.
Okay. So for people who are interested in volunteering, where would they go?
There will be a tent that would be, usually if you come in off of the 3rd Street side, it's probably right in the middle of the monument on the Clay Street side. There'll be an information tent, but otherwise just come down and join us and enjoy the music. And you always see somebody you know. There's a variety of food trucks down there with the really great food. They, you know, so you're buying tickets from us. That's for either for water or for the beverages. The food trucks sell food and like pop and things like that separately. That doesn't come through us. And there's usually an ATM machine down there as well. So, but cash is always accepted as well.
Okay. Yes. I know it's a wonderful time. The kids even sometimes have a zone there where they can sit here and play. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the adults can have some fun. And then everything ends at 9. I don't know about anybody else, but I go to bed early, you know, so
I'm really grateful that it ends at 9 because I'll be on my feet for the whole 4 hours probably. But it's just always a great, I mean, I've been going to them since 1990 and they started a few years before that. And, it's that, you know, I don't know if everybody knows that idea came from a group of people here in Muskegon going to someplace. I can't remember if it was Cleveland, but I know it was in Ohio, and saw that they were doing something like these. And so they were designed to be these like starting after work on Friday. And so we've been doing them ever since. And there's 2 organizations that always are guaranteed a party in the park every year. And that's JCI, which I know is the JCs. Mm-hmm. And the Rotary Club, because they have been there the whole time. So they alternate, and I'm in Rotary. They alternate with one gets the first party and one gets the last party, but they're the only 2 organizations that are grandfathered in because they've been there since the very beginning and helped get it started 41 years ago. That's a really great committee as well, because they're all volunteers and they do a lot of work to put this really fabulous event on for the summer.
Okay. That makes more sense now because
Yeah. If you see those 2 organizations, you're like, why do they always?
It's always
been there the whole 41 years. They've been it because I served on the board as a representative of the JCs in the 90s. And it's, you know, I just think it's a phenomenal thing for the community. I love that it has lasted that long. And you see all kinds of people, young, old, kids, like you said, people bring their camp chairs and they line the lawn and then there's people up there dancing.
Yeah, and, going strong though. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen a night where it's like barely anybody there. It's usually something that everybody knows in Muskegon. It's like, oh, well, if I don't have anything to do.
It's kind of amazing that it lasts this long, mm-hmm. that it's gone on for 41 years.
It's nice to see, though, the consistency. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. It's great.
Because we know in this community, we've seen things come, we've seen things go, but I love that this is still there and that it's still vibrant and that it still benefits nonprofits. And that's what I think is wonderful. You know, it costs nonprofits some money to do that. So we always hope that it doesn't rain. But fortunately, there's not a lot of risk in it. The park is nice and shaded, so even when it's really hot, it's not awful. Yeah. There's a lot of class reunions that happen there. Yeah. Almost every week, somebody's doing a class reunion, which makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely. So we only have a few minutes left. So before we go, would you like to tell our audience anything in particular, or sure. do you want to run back some more of what they can do to volunteer
well,
or
to join? It's actually going to be both. So okay. we have a lot of really great programs, but a couple of them that we do through some grants from places like Haumetz Foundation and the Community Foundation. We have a math tutoring program that happens in Muskegon Heights where we could use some volunteers and we train them, but they go in and they work with students in Muskegon Heights schools to try to help them get the teachers identify people, some students, and then there's volunteers that go in and work with them to try to get them up to speed on their math skills. And that would be a really fabulous thing if somebody's interested in that.
Is there a certain grade cutoff or start?
I think they do it through middle school. I think it's like fourth through eighth grade. Okay. But they're trying to do it so they're prepared when they go into high school that they're not behind. So, yeah. And we've seen some really great work with that. And then we also have some similar things where we're looking for tutors for some literacy programs. And we've got some programs in Bunker Elementary that could use some people. And that's, again, it's using a curriculum where
Go
we
Big
train
Reds.
People.
I'm sorry.
That's great. Yeah. So they're in some other districts as well, but I'm thinking Muskegon and Muskegon Heights. We've got the Bunker program for literacy. We've got Muskegon Heights for the math, and we need volunteer tutors for that. And we train them. And then you're usually committing to maybe an hour or two a week where you're going in either during the school day or after school to work with some students on that. But we absolutely, because you might go, I don't know how to train, you know,
but
that's what we do. We provide the training. We've worked with partners at the intermediate school district. We work with the schools, of course, to make sure there's a certain literacy program that we use in these few schools that we're in. We're in Holton and Orchard View as well. But there's great training on that, and all of that's available on our website, or you can give us a call at United Way, and we would love to have more volunteers for those kind of things.
Okay, that sounds great. Just want to take a quick second to say thank you guys for all the help that you have given to 103.7 The Beat. We do appreciate it. We've been collaborating with you guys for years.
Yes, we have.
And I can tell you enough that we appreciate the relationship and the collab. So if you guys are looking to do any collabs, these are the people right here.
We love to work with people. We're all about that.
Okay. Well, that's it. Plug yourself in one more time. Parties in the Park, time, place, and then we will head to commercial break.
Party in the Park tonight, July 25th from 5 to 9 p.m. down at Hackley Park. The band is Westside Soul Surfers. They're amazing. We'd love to see you.
All right. We'll be back with more after this quick break. Hello and welcome back to Community Focus. We just had Lisa Tyler, the president and CEO of United Way, as our first guest, and now we're on to our second. He is running for Muskegon Heights City Council, and his name is William Kitchen. Welcome.
How you doing?
Thank Good.
You
for having me. Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm just a regular guy from Muskegon Heights, honestly. I'm engaged in a lot of community support, a lot of mentorship. And right now I'm currently running for a council seat in Muskegon Heights.
Okay. So you ready to get down into these
I'm
questions?
I'm ready. Let's go.
Okay. So the first.
Take it easy on me, please.
Well, I don't know if I can say that. But let's see what we have here. So what have you already contributed to Muskegon Heights, whether through leadership, service, volunteering, or community building?
That's a good question. I think one of the things that I've brought to Muskegon Heights, from at least from an independent standpoint, is mentorship with our kids. Most of the people that know me knows that I'm somehow engaged in trying to create a better tomorrow for the youth. Some of that looks like doing different programming, like a chess program, sitting with them one-on-one, hearing their needs, hearing their concerns. I think a lot of times we kind of discredit the youth because they're young, and a lot of older people think, well, they don't know nothing.
Like, you got to bridge the gap, kind
of. Yeah. So I feel like that's kind of one of my roles, is to create a bridge between the younger generation and the older generation. I do a lot of involvement with reentry programming. Okay. When guys come home from incarceration, I try to get them plugged into accessing different resources, whether it's their bridge card, gas cards, bus cards, clothing vouchers, whatever I can do to kind of help them along their path to reacclimate to society. And just to be a voice of the people who feel like they're not being heard. So a lot of the issues that I've got behind and tried to advocate for was issues that I felt directly impact the citizens and the residents. So those are just a couple of the things that I get involved with pretty much on a day-to-day basis.
Okay. So some of these questions we're about to get into, I want you to give it a little thought if you have to, because it's going to be dealing directly with some of the things that people feel like is going on within the city of Muskegon Heights.
Yeah.
So what specific actions will you take to make city budgets, contracts, and development deals fully transparent? And how will you keep our community regularly informed without anyone having to dig for answers?
So I'm big on communication. I think that our relationships, whether it's a personal relationship, a friendship with family, with local government, whatever relationship that we encounter, the first thing should be communication. Directly following that would be clarity, because what's communication without understanding?
Absolutely.
Right? So I want to be able to not only communicate to the residents, but to be able to provide clarity. I want to be a listening ear first. I mean, of course, I'm from Muskegon Heights, so I know the problems that exist. At least I believe I do. But my problems may not be the next person's problems. And so I don't want to close off any residents to what their problems and concerns are. So the first thing I want to do is be a listening ear. Once I can collectively determine what the priority list would be, then you effectively create solutions behind it. But I don't want to be the person that come in like, yo, I got all of the solutions. I can fix everything.
Yeah.
And then 4 years later, I've done nothing. And so the first thing that I do is I would like to be a listening ear to figure out what's going on with the residents collectively as a whole. And then how do we sit down and develop strategic solutions to fix and address those problems?
Okay. Okay. On to the next one. How will you ensure that no elected official, staff member, or their close connections profit from city contracts or real estate deals? And how should conflicts of interest be handled in a way that our community can trust?
So I would advocate for different things to be implemented in how we govern those type of opportunities with policy and protocol. There has to be a standard set. There has to be a rule that's implemented to prevent ones from doing that. And if so done, there's consequences behind it. To be honest with you, right now, it's kind of like a lot of people in Muskegon Heights operate under this Wild Wild West mentality.
Can you clarify Wild Wild West?
Yeah, like
I think about City. Okay.
Okay. Know, there's like as if there's no rule of law to our operations, as if there's no protocol to how we should conduct ourselves with decorum and with professionalism. So one of the things that I will advocate for is that we have a standard, that we all have a rule and a regulation and a protocol when we're developing these different opportunities for the city. The measuring stick should be predicated upon how does it best serve my community and my people, not my own self-interest. It may not make sense for me personally, but if it makes sense for the community and for the people within this community, that's what I should be aligning myself with. I believe that every developmental opportunity should be done with strict investigation. Who are you? Where do you come from? Exactly what are you planning and intending to do, right? There shouldn't be no connection towards anyone on council to receive any benefit, kickback, or deal from whatever occurs with a developer or with any business interest that comes into the city, because we serve not in our own individual capacity, but for the blessing and the benefit of the people.
Okay. Okay. So on to the next question. It says, will you support a public audit or financial review of where our community's money has gone over the past 5 years, especially funds meant for housing, blight removal, and public safety?
One of my points on my platform is transparency and accountability. Everybody needs to be held accountable. We can't expect the citizenry and the residents to be held accountable for their actions if the leadership isn't. And the only way that we can get a clear understanding is by going and say, what happened to this? What happened to that? Where did that go? I'm all for a forensic audit. I want to know, me personally as well, like, what happened? Because we're not without, we're not a city that doesn't have access to means. It's just that the means that we have access to may not have been managed properly. And if that's the case, that's okay. Some of us may have dropped the ball. That's okay. We give our people grace.
Yeah.
But we have to come with a solution now. We have to fix the problem. We can't continue to allow ourselves to bleed from these wounds that were created years and years ago. We have to identify it and then solve the problem. And we can only do that by collectively working together, as well as getting a buy-in from the people. But more specifically, there's nothing wrong with communicating with your community and letting them know, hey, this is what we had coming in. This is what we dispersed out. This is what remains. We would like to do this with the remaining. What are your thoughts? Let's build partnership back with community and have the community more so exist as an accountability partner for council. That'd be the greatest relationship that we can develop, to have the community as our accountability partner. But the only way that we can do that is through transparency. Stop hiding the hand. Stop hiding what's being done. And I can't speak to whatever motive a person may have, but what I can speak to is we need to do better in how we communicate with our people.
Okay. Okay. I was making sure we had some. This is getting really good, y'all. I hope y'all tuned in. But next is number 5. It says, how will you guarantee that members of our community, especially renters, seniors, homeowners, and low-income families, have a meaningful voice in decisions that affect our neighborhoods and resources?
And the people might get mad at me for the way I'm going to answer this. I can't force anyone to show up. Right? I'm one of the people that sit back and see how people will turn out for an R&B event, a twerk fest, right? Everybody there, right?
Yeah.
The older people, younger people. But then if we have a town hall, it's scarce.
Yeah.
Or if we have a formal gathering about a housing issue, it's scarce.
Absolutely.
The walls should be packed from wall to wall. We don't show up and show out for the events that we should. That's what I'm getting to, right?
Yeah.
I can't force someone to come. I can notify you. I can suggest that you be there. But ultimately, it's on the people. We have to have the buy-in from the people. So I believe that it's about presentation and packaging, right? It ain't just about, hey, we're doing an event. We want you to come, show up. No one shows up. On to the next one. We have to engage. There is a lot of correction that needs to happen in Muskegon Heights. You can't have correction without connection, right? In order to correct the thing, you have to connect with that. And so a lot of times when we throw in these events, that's for the greater good of the community. No one has really connected to the people. So we have to take advantage of direct contact and stop solely relying upon social media to do our bidding. You have to get out there with the people so that they know that, hey, he's with us.
It's almost more like of a sense of showing up as a sense of educating yourself about the community.
Absolutely. You know, if you know better, you will do better.
Absolutely. I agree with you on that one. So on to the next one. What's your plan to invest in youth programs and cultural spaces, since we just kind of hit on it slightly, that reflect the heritage and needs of the predominantly Black community, while also improving public safety without relying on over policy?
For sure. So I'm a kitchen, right? It's a lot of kitchens. On my mother's side, I'm a Huey Easter. Both sides of my family were heavily involved in community and in church. I say that because I come from the ideal of the village that we say no longer exists. I would love to see that village restored. That's what kept me hopeful and faithful that Muskegon Heights can return to its glory, because I remember when we did have that village. One of the main direct points to your question is we need a rec department reestablished. And within that rec department, we're focusing and emphasizing on workforce development. This is something that takes trillions of dollars. This just takes investment from our leadership and somebody to sign on the dotted line.
Yeah.
Because we have people in our community that are in the community that want to do the work. And they will come. They will show up. But we have to create the space for them to be able to do that. That's the leadership's job. So with that pen, we opening up doors and we opening up opportunities for the people to come in and get involved and do the work that they do from a grassroots, from a street level. Again, I come from a village type of family. We had success when we operated as a village, as a community, as one people. Right now, our culture and our community is fractured. So what I would like to do is bring unity back to that. I'm not a sit behind a desk type of leader. I'm a servant minded leader. I want to get out there with the people and figure out how do we be the best people that we can be.
Okay. So the Muskegon Heights City Charter hasn't been meaningfully updated in years. Would you support a transparent and community-led process to modernize it and ensure it includes stronger protection against corruption and clear accountability for leadership?
For sure. And we have a lot of people in our community that are very intelligent and very well experienced. So to look at our charter, let's bring in the greatest minds in our community to sit with us. It always have to be a collaboration between leadership and residents. I think we're missing that. We got some beautiful, great minds in our community that can actually add value to the leadership if given the opportunity. So when we discussing things like a charter, man, this is something that the community should have buy-in with. Because we're asking not to only be governed by that charter, but for everybody to accept it and receive it.
Yeah.
Let's give them an opportunity to have their insight and their wisdom installed in that charter as well, because it's a document that's for us as a whole. So I don't believe that it should just come from leadership. The leader said this and we're going to put that in there. Man, we got some smart people here in the Heights. And I believe they should be given an opportunity to collaborate with leadership to develop and to amend and revise the charter in a way that it best reflects our desires, our goals, and our needed protections in them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I can definitely understand more so the community effort to it. I think a lot of it needs to be re-educated to the community, because things have changed throughout the years. So in changing, it's quick to, you have to be quick to adapt. And also to make sure it fits the needs of the people within the city of Muskegon Heights.
So, ultimately, that's what we're here for. We're servants.
Absolutely. And I love that you sit here and say that, because serving is the most important factor before anything else. And that's what ties a lot of things together. If you're willing to serve, then other things will follow. But you have to be able to serve first. So before people ask more information about you, you spoke about I thought we had a comment. Tell us a little bit more about your own backstory, because you told us a little bit about how your family was a village kind of family. And what made you really want to come back and give back to Muskegon specifically?
For me, it was my lived experience. I was taken off the streets in Muskegon Heights when I was 14 years old and put in prison for a crime that I am and was guilty of. And I was sentenced to 11 years in prison. But because I got in there doing all of the wrong things, I extended that 11 years into 21 years. When I come home, I'm thinking I'm returning to the village that I left. And I came home to just pure and unadulterated violence. Especially from the young people. And I couldn't figure it out. Like, we used to fight, and then tomorrow we playing basketball together. Well, now we out here, kids killing kids. I couldn't understand it. And then I seen the deterioration of the community. I remember my first vehicle, man, I needed the new front wheel alignment because of the roads. Right? And I'm just like, man, it seems like a lot of care and concern had evaporated, and it was no longer a part of the community. And so one of the things that inspired me was, one, I didn't want to see kids going down the same road that I went down. Secondly, you know, I'm seeing my aunts and my cousins and my older relatives feeling unsafe in their own city, in their own neighborhoods. And then I'm seeing the youth feeling unheard and unloved and neglected. And so instead of being a part of the problem, I wanted to be a part of the solution. That's what it ultimately boils down to. It's easy to be a part of the problem. The challenges that I face now trying to be a part of the solution, I would have never faced if I was trying to be a part of the problem. That would have come easy.
Yeah,
it's more challenges and barriers when you try to help and when you try to serve. It's more doors that close on you when you try to be a blessing and a benefit to other people. Not everybody is readily willing to accept you and bring you in. I had a lot of doors close on me. Pathfinders was, can't speak enough on Pathfinders. They was one of the ones that initially was just like, hey, what are you trying to do? Let's collaborate. We got your back. And so for 4 years, I've been involved with them. Whenever they call me, I come running. Same thing here. Like, if there's kids that need mentoring, you tell me, I'm coming running, because I understand the value in investing into our youth. I understand the value in investing into our community. If you say that you want to be a part of the solution, you have to address, engage, and attack the problem. And the problem is our kids are going neglected and unheard and unloved. Our elders feel unsafe. Our community is deteriorating. And the only way to solve those issues is to bring back servant-minded leadership, people who's willing to serve in the capacity for the blessing and the benefit of the people and not their own self-interest.
Okay. So going more back into something that you had previously mentioned, because this is your first time running for council. So with what you've seen, and you were talking about how things were scarce when it comes to town halls, what made you want to run for city council? And what did you see any discrepancies within the current council that's there now?
So one of the main things is I've learned through this journey of mine that the pen is mightier than a sword. That a lot of people in our community that would love to step up and do different things within the community, and even people outside the community that has great ideas that would love to come in and collaborate as partners, they feel they've been blocked out of that. And so one of the reasons why I do and would love to run is I want to open up those doors, right? We've isolated ourselves as a city to the point to where we almost watching ourselves die off. Everybody continues to say, oh, they're going to come in and take the city. They're going to come in and take this. They're going to come in and take that. Well, if you truly believe that, why not start doing the necessary things for them not to do it? So I don't want to be on the sidelines saying, hey, you should have did this. You could have did that. I'll just take the responsibility myself and see what I can do with it. So that's, for me, that's what it was about. To protect my community, to preserve my community, I had to be in a space and in a place to where I had some sort of buy-in with the pen to be able to do that. Because ultimately, and I hate to say it, we can do all the wonderful things inside the streets and the community that we want to do, but because we don't have access to the pen, right? Doors get closed, opportunities get missed, and then other people come in and take advantage of us. So my job is to provide a shield for the people on city council. I'm really representing the community. I'm really representing the people. And so with the instances and in cases where I feel like, you know, the administration, former administrations could have done differently, it's only because we have a social dynamic to us that feel like we could have did better. But why would I bash you for not doing what I would have did if I'm not trying to do it?
That's powerful right there, y'all, because a lot of people talk, but they don't want to sit here and put it out there.
They don't want to put themselves in them shoes.
No, that's very, very hard to do. Yep. Just like you see and you said, you know, when you're putting yourself out there, you're taking a risk, but you're going to try to back it up the best that you can. And then another thing that you had set here and you were speaking about before you were telling the audience that you thought there was a lot that Muskegon Heights could benefit from. What would you do to bring resources to the community, help with the homeowners, everybody who's here? What would you do to help Muskegon Heights thrive once again? Or what are your thoughts?
Well, I think there's an education piece that needs to be had first. So when I was at Grand Valley, we did an investigation into Muskegon Heights where we identify housing as one of the main issues in Muskegon Heights. And so I know that that's an issue for a lot of people, but a lot of people don't understand or possess a renter's mentality from a homeowner's mentality. Mm. So there needs to be an education piece that comes in first to show the people, like, this is how the city benefits from home ownership. This is how you personally benefit from home ownership. And then let's provide the apparatus to where we show you how to do it. Come alongside our people, because a lot of us haven't had the history and the programming and the education to know how to do it. But we have people within our own community that's masters of it. So again, we bring back collaboration. Let's create the apparatus to where we're showing and teaching our people and coming alongside of our people, showing you how you go from a renter's mentality to a homeowner's mentality, showing you how to maintain a home, right? A lot of us don't like to admit it, but we just don't know how. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us never had nobody in our lives that showed us how, right? Mm-hmm. When you come from 2-3 generations of people that lived in East Park Manor, and then you expect them to leave East Park Manor and go into home ownership, but all they know from the last 2 or 3 generations is East Park Manor.
Yep.
Right. So we have to have people that have enough love and grace in their heart to be able to come alongside our people to show them how to make that transition and to provide them the information that they need necessary to make that transition. So that's the first piece. The second piece is there has to be, man, it's so many abandoned buildings and houses out here in Muskegon Heights.
Yeah.
That's not being put to use. Mm. But we have to have strategic partnerships with developers and housing people that can come in and provide us those type of services. There's nothing wrong with that, as long as it benefits the community and the people, not our own self-interest. So one of the things that I will be looking at primarily is housing and how to best educate our people on home ownership and how best to give them access to that home ownership.
Okay. So it's somewhat the same question, but this is regarding businesses.
And I'm hot. I'm sweating.
That's all right.
She's killing me with the question. I asked her to take it easy. She ain't playing. No,
you're all right. You're all right. That shows that you actually dedicated, that you mean what you say.
Absolutely.
So going back to the question before, what would you do when it comes to businesses, bringing businesses to or entertainment, whatever it is to generate more revenue besides the housing to Muskegon Heights?
Yeah, man, we have to create incentive-based. I would love to see an incentive-based program created for residents that have small businesses to be able to operate inside of Muskegon Heights. I know this might sound a little off to some people, but my people understand. We have so many women that's doing hair and nails outside of a home when we have plazas, right?
Yeah.
When we have space for them that's not being developed for them. The community and the city needs to have that collaborative relationship, right? To know who is who and what is what, and so that we can make an investment in them that will ultimately benefit others. I'll give you another example. We have so many youth that's into like fashion and clothing, but where do they go technically to learn these skills and trades? There's nothing inside of Muskegon Heights for that. Right. So why are we not creating apparatuses that they can come in and learn that trade? They took trades out of schools long time ago. But that doesn't mean the city can't provide for its own. I just believe that the care and concern of our future is not being invested in presently. But those are ways that you can invest. There's so many people in Muskegon Heights that have businesses and LLCs, but they have to go outside of Muskegon Heights to make money. That's because we don't promote that.
Mm-hmm.
You don't cater to that.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to. And so this is how we begin to start bringing back revenue here in Muskegon Heights, by investing in the people that can drive consumer products. If I see and know of people that can bring and generate funds and finances, why would I want to continue to force them into other municipalities to go do business elsewhere when we right here?
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing with other organizations. Other organizations placate to our youth, but it has no benefit to our youth really, because they have to go outside of Muskegon Heights to even attend one of their workshops programs. We have nothing at home.
That's true.
If you ask people, what's one of the most criminalized cities in Muskegon County? They would say Muskegon Heights. But we have no crime prevention programs here in Muskegon Heights. If you ask them, what's one of the most drug infested cities in Muskegon County? They'll say Muskegon Heights. But what are we doing here for recovery in Muskegon Heights?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So everything that we face and every adversity that we have, we don't do nothing to combat that here in Muskegon Heights, although we have the resources to do it.
Absolutely. That was a great answer to that question. You've been, I mean, in my opinion, killing it to all of them.
Thank you.
I love the transparency through it, and also how you were direct with the answer. So thank you very much. And we don't have that much time. So with the time that we do have, I'm going to give you time to put in your plug where people can go to support you, and what else you may feel like the audience may need to know.
For sure, man. You can follow me on Facebook at William Kitchen or Lake William Kitchen. The website will be up on Monday. So I'll make sure that the people get that information as well. But you see me around. If you have any questions or concerns for me, I'm always approachable.
Is there a number that they can contact you with?
231-750-7585. Since I've announced, I have so many people like texting me and DMing me, I respond to all of them.
I did see that. When I'm telling you, he said, I checked you out on Facebook. You were literally going down the list when you said he was about to run. So kudos to you.
I respect that. It's just a form of respect. Like, you took the time to say a thing to me. I want to reciprocate that respect. If, you know, a lot of people got in them DM was like, hey, congrats, we support. I'm responding to everything. I'm accepting every phone call, simply not just because I'm running for the elected, but I want to know. I'm like, y'all, like, I want to figure this thing out so that we can be successful. And I may take a phone call or respond to a message that be a blessing and a benefit to somebody else. I'm not going to miss that opportunity. But that's what's missing in our leadership, I believe, is the connection to the people. That's what I want to bring to the table. That buy-in from the people. You can't do the power has always been and will always be in the hands of the people. The issue is somebody tricked us into believing that the people no longer possess the power.
That was powerful right there. And there you have it. That was Muskegon Heights City Council candidate William Kitchen. Thank you for stopping by. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
And then I don't know exactly what Greg or Melvin say at the end of the show besides this: go out and sow a seed, because you never know who you may be helping. That's our show for today. Please check us out. Party with us tomorrow at the Levert Experience. That will be starting at 7. Doors open up at 6. And see you next week.